Theater, a series of hour-length dramas based on some of the most significant writings of our time, with an introduction and commentary by one of the great personalities of the American theater, the distinguished actress, director, and producer, Eva LaGallion. Miss LaGallion.
Good evening once again, and good afternoon to our friends in the West. Last Sunday, I announced that our play today would be based on Whistle Stop, the novel by Marietta Wolfe. Unfortunately, due to last-minute difficulties, we've had to change our program. And instead, we're bringing you a transcribed dramatization of a book by one of the most brilliant of modern English writers, Aldous Huxley. After Many a Summer Dies the Swan is the curious title. Huxley wrote it in 1939. It's a devastating and bitter satire, in spots excruciatingly funny. There's also something decidedly macabre about it. Many of you may not agree with it at all, but I'm pretty sure that you'll all be interested in it. Huxley never fails to be stimulating and provocative, even when one disagrees with him most violently. The setting of this strange intellectual excursion is California, and our performance today actually takes place there, for while I am speaking to you from New York, the players of our company are in Hollywood. I invite them now to begin their performance of Aldous Huxley's After Many a Summer Dies the Swan.
I was reading Wordsworth when the train pulled into Los Angeles Station. Not that I'm overly fond of Wordsworth. My instructions were to search for a tall chauffeur in a gray uniform, and I presume his were, to track down a middle-aged Englishman carrying the poetical works of William Wordsworth.
Mr. Pottet, sir. Welcome to Los Angeles.
Oh, Mr. Stokes, chauffeur?
That's right, sir. I'd have known you by your voice even without that book.
Yes, my voice. Why is it that in America I have only to ask for a cup of coffee to draw gales of laughter? It's quite provoking.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Oh, never mind, never mind. If you will collect my box at the window, we'll be off. Mr. Stoyt's motor car rolled exceedingly smoothly, and I abandoned myself to the pleasure of looking. Southern California rolled past the window. We were traveling westward. The sunshine lit up each building and sky sign as though with a spotlight. The billboards were most emphatic.
Do things, go places with console gas.
That's one of ours, Mr. Porter.
What's that?
Console gas. That's Mr. Stoyt's company. He's president.
Broken romance. Science proves that 73% of all adults have halitosis.
Beverly Pantheon, the cemetery that is different. Funerals are not expensive.
That's ours, too.
Oh, you mean the Beverly Pantheon?
Finest cemetery in the world, I guess. We could stop by if you'd like to see it. Oh, look, over there to the right.
Beverly Pantheon?
No, that's where Ginger Rogers lives.
Oh,
yes, sir, Ginger Rogers. Pantheon's down the road, sir.
You too can have abiding youth with drill form figure control.
That's Groucho Marx's place over there. Here we are, the Beverly Pantheon.
Beverly Pantheon, the personality cemetery.
Oh, that's the Tower of Pisa, isn't it? Except that he doesn't lean.
It's the showplace of the Beverly Pantheon. Mr. Stoyt had it straightened special. $200,000, that's what it costs. Yes, sir.
We went through a whirlwind tour of the Beverly Pantheon, everything. The pet cemetery, the poet's corner, the black marble vestibule of ashes, leading to the supermodern burning mortuary furnace. And finally, the Pantheon itself. And overall, the inescapable crooning of a perpetual Wurlitzer automatic organ. This new heaven of the Beverly Pantheon seemed to promise all the more conventional delights, with the added joys of everlasting tennis, eternal golf, and millennial swimming.
Class, the Pantheon, eh, Mr. Porter?
Yes, definitely. Out of this world, what?
Now, look up there. Between those hills, there it is. That's Mr. Stoyt's place.
On the summit of the bluff, as though growing out of the rocks, stood a castle. The thing was Gothic, medieval. Medieval not out of vulgar historical necessity like the castles of France and Germany, but out of pure fun and wantonness. Platonically, one might say. It was medieval as only a witty and irresponsible modern architect and engineer is equipped to be.
Want a ride, Mr. Proctor?
Oh, hello, George. Nice of you to stop for me.
Always glad to, Mr. Proctor. This here is Mr. Portage from England. I'm sure he won't mind.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Paul.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
How do you do?
Visiting Mr. Stoich, Mr. Portage?
I am here on business. I'm to catalog the Hoback papers. Mr. Stoich just bought them. A historical treasure, you know.
Hmm. You're a scholar?
well, a bit, yes.
A scholar and a gentleman. Well, there are worse types of human beings. I might almost claim to have been one myself long ago.
You're not William Proctor, are you? Not the one who wrote short studies in the Counter-Reformation? Well, I'm jiggered.
Remarkable building, the castle, isn't it? Ah, poor Joe Stoich. Think of having that millstone round one's neck.
Well, I shouldn't exactly think it is a millstone.
No, neither does Joe, but it is. Perhaps it might help you if you knew about Joe. We were at school together, he and I. Only nobody called him Joe in those days. We called him Slob or Jelly Belly. You see, Joe was a fat boy, and how we punished him for his glandular deficiencies. You might remember that fat boy when you meet the man. Help you to understand. Well, here I am at home. George, I'll get off here.
Okay, Mr. Proctor. Have a good time, Mr. Boyd.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Portage, pleased to meet you. My name's Stoich. Joe Stoich.
Oh,
You're older than I thought.
the sear and withered leaf, you know, one sinking...
What's your age?
54.
Only 54? Ought to be full of pep at 54. How do you do with the ladies?
Well, the more book I'm showing what it is.
What's that? No use talking foreign languages to me. I'm head of an oil company. Got 2,000 stations in California alone. And not one man in any of those filling stations that isn't a college graduate. Go and talk foreign languages to them. You're to do those old papers, aren't you? What the devil's the name of them? Roebuck, Hoback? Just bought them this summer.
The Hoback papers.
Hoback, that's right. What were you saying about women when you started that foreign stuff all day?
Well, what was implying? It was normal to one's age.
What do you know about what's normal at your age? Go talk to Dr. Obispo about that.
Dr. Obispo?
It won't cost you anything. He's on salary. He's a house physician. Knows everything about long life. Want to see the castle? I'll take you around.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I've already seen your burial ground.
What? What's that? My burial ground? What the devil do you mean?
Oh, I understood. Right. That is, that you own the Beverly Pantheon.
That. Well, don't say that again. Not by moderation, no. Can't get excited, Obispo warned me. Come on.
It is a large castle, isn't it?
20 stories. We'll go down to the hospital now. Stoich Hospital for Children. They call me Uncle Joe.
Well, they do.
Poor kid. Makes me feel I'd kind of like to cry. By the way, Mr.
Portage.
Have you got a religion?
More or less, yes.
The late Mrs. Stoich was very religious. Taught me a slogan. God is love. There is no death.
Good one, eh?
There is no death.
Well, I think it
is. There used to be a text over my bed when I was a kid. Orange letters on a black cardboard. It is a terrible thing to fall into the hands of a living God. Different, isn't it? Now, what the devil made me bring that? Oh, never mind. The blazes with a hospital. We'll go up to the roof. Got a pool up there. We'll have a swim before dinner, huh?
The view from the swimming pool was remarkable. One had only to turn one's head to see successive vistas of plain and mountain, green, tawny, and faint blue. If one turned the other way, one saw Miss Virginia Mansible poised on the diving board. Miss Mansible was, the chauffeur informed me that she was a particular friend of Mr. Stoich's. And in his friend, Mr. Stoich was particular, for she was,
She was excessively beautiful. There was not much bathing dress to conceal it.
There, Uncle Joe. You're feeling kind of good.
Oh, feeling fine, baby.
Doesn't the sun feel good?
Little baby, I'd like to eat you.
I'm tough.
Yeah, a little tough, dear.
What did you bring old Baldy here for, Uncle Joe?
Oh, to catalog some old papers I bought in England. Looks funny, doesn't it?
Floating around that pool like an old Buddha. Yeah. I'm going to dive in and duck
him. Oh, don't go away, baby. I did some business this morning. I'd make a lot of money, real money.
How much?
Maybe half a million, maybe a million, maybe even more.
Uncle Joe, I think you're wonderful.
Ah, it's easy, baby.
Easy nothing. I say you're wonderful. So just keep your own mouth shut.
Stop it. You're tickling me. Stop it.
Oh, my wonderful Uncle Joe. Are
you impressed if the team goes through? What'd you like, baby?
I don't know. I never really want things bad. Uncle Joe, I don't think I want anything.
That's what I like about you, baby.
No, I don't want anything.
Don't you, Virginia? Well, I do.
Oh, baseball. Don't pussyfoot up like that. I don't like to be startled. I don't like it at all. Not at all.
Mr. Floyd, I don't advise you working up a temper. Anger is a poison, my friend, and not a slow one. But if you want to shorten your life instead of lengthening...
All right. What do you want, Doctor?
To be precise, I want to inject 1.5 cubic centimeters of this stuff into the great man's gluteus major. So off with you, Virginia.
Sig, you're on all...
Up along, Angel.
Yeah, I think you're Tyrone Power or something, don't you?
You're ready for the injection, Mrs. Todd.
No, Bispo. I don't like the way you talk.
No, I don't suppose you do. It makes your blood boil, but when your blood boils, your blood pressure goes up and... Well, you just can't afford to be angry with me.
Oh, Miss, well, I
put you on your feet after the last stroke, Mr. Stoy. Without me, perhaps next week, the week after, within the year.
I don't talk like that. I don't like it.
But if I continue my research, perhaps 10 years more for you, or 20, or 30, or even... There's no guessing about that.
You think there's a chance, Obispo? You really think
that... That, my friend and benefactor, time will tell. Read an out injection. Roll over.
Oh, be careful with that, Tompkins. Those papers are valuable.
They sure got them crated up, solid. Got them now.
Beautiful, aren't they? Hundreds of years, Hobart after Hobart. Knights, barons, earls. Records, letters, papers, never cataloged. Oh, look here, look here. 1576.
Yeah, sure. Look, Mr. Portage, I'll be going.
I showed you something, a copy of the Marquis de Sade. Oh, I've never even seen one in my mind. Wow, what an imagination. Oh, delicious.
Just call me when you want them other cases open. Oh, hello, Dr. Bisbal. Don't let me disturb you. I said, don't let me disturb you.
What?
My name is Obispo. Dr. Signan Obispo, physician in ordinary to His Majesty King Stoy the First. And let's hope, also the last.
Oh, yes, I saw you at the pool.
That's quite a stack of words you've got here. A dribble.
Hmm?
A string of words called religion, another string of words called philosophy, half a dozen other string of called ideals. You know, I don't know how you liberal artists stand. Don't you find some sense once in a while?
Oh, it's a great deal of fun, you know. Just scrabbling about in the dust heap. Mustn't worry about the meaning.
Frank, anyway. Most of the PhD boys are blasted snobs trying to pull that high moral culture on you. You know, wisdom rather than knowledge. Mm. At least you admit you're in your racket just for fun. That's what I'm in mind for.
So?
Mind you, I'm not entirely blind to the charms of your racket. Say, is that Bogue de Marquis de Sade?
Well, I rather repair
it. Oh, well, it is. It's quite a man, you know. Mind if I borrow this? I've got a particular use for a bookmaker.
Oh, but I really
yes,
don't...
Thank you very much. Come on down to the hall. See my laboratory.
Well, you know, really, I should. I mean, these papers...
They've waited 500 years. Come on.
Well, I suppose...
Longevity is my racket. I wouldn't be able to follow it if I were in practice. Devil of a nuisance looking after patients. That's why I fasten on your story.
Oh, he's concerned with longevity?
Concerned? He'll go scared silly. The panic with him, fear of death, you know. And I've been living on that panic for 5 years.
Oh, really?
It's a researcher's paradise. I have everything I need with old Joe thrown in as a guinea pig.
Oh, cooperative, hmm?
He's ready to submit to anything, provided it gives him some hope of staying above the ground a few years longer.
Oh?
You know, the interesting thing, old age. Why should dogs be senile at 14 and parrots alive and kicking at 100? Or a fish live to 200 without signs of senility? While poor Joe Stoy... here we are. That's our mice. We've got nearly 1,000 of those.
Hello, Doc.
Oh, my assistant, Pete Boone. Pete, this is Mr. Portage.
Glad to meet you, sir.
Oh, yes, sir. Pleased to meet you.
Pete is a bright boy. Knows his physiology. Good with his hands, too. Here, look at these mice, Portage.
Lively, aren't they?
Lively enough while the effects last. They're shot full of what I poured into old Joe this morning. Not that the old devil needs it. It's young Virginia. I'll go get the diet sheets out. Well, put my foot in it again.
I beg your pardon?
Poor old Pete. Fantastically in love. Thinks our Miss Montable is like something in the works of Tennyson. You know, chemically pure. Well, if it makes him happy, I won't spoil. Oh, speaking of Uncle Joey, take a look at this.
Fish, by Joe.
Yes, and what fish? Joe had them stolen from an estate in Europe. They've got rings in their tails dated 1761.
1761? Hmm? Oh, that's the beginning of my favorite period.
Those carp are nearly 200 years old. Perfect health. And there's no reason why they shouldn't live another 3 centuries.
It's incredible.
There's something about the flora in the intestinal tract of those fish. Something that kills the poisons that produce senility. It's something that...
Well, rather a fountain of youth.
That's all right, my friend. Go ahead, laugh. But we're working on the operation that will transfer that something from the carp to... Well, now we're working on mice.
Mice?
After that large animal. And if it works all right on dogs and baboons, it ought to work on Uncle Joe.
We had dinner in the small dining room. It was the sort of place you think of when you hear the word cafe, with original Fra Angelico murals on the walls for a spiritual touch. Mr. Stoyt was with us and Miss Montable. Dr. Obispo spent the hour telling stories to the lady, while young Pete gazed at her with a rapt pre-Raphaelite expression. After luncheon, Virginia, Pete, and the doctor went off to feed the baboons.
Here now, Virginia, it's rather safest for them.
Oh, aren't they cute? Absolutely divine.
Well, divine is an adjective I hadn't thought of applying to baboons. But, here, throw the rest of the food.
That old fellow's looking seedy, Doc. He won't even come eat.
He's hungry, all right. He's just afraid to leave his lady friend. Here, Angel, throw this potato in front of him.
Okay. There.
He's taking notice now.
Well, so's the young chap on the rocks. Look at him. He's just waiting till the old boy gets away so I can dash for the lady.
Come on, funny thing. Go get the carrot. Here.
And there goes young Lancelot sweeping down on the lady. That's young love for you.
Oh, aren't they cute?
The old one's too busy eating to notice it.
Aren't they cute? Aren't they human?
Mr. Proctor would say it the other way around. Aren't we baboon-like?
Oh, that's silly.
I don't know. He's pretty smart. Say, as long as we're half down the hill, why not go see him?
Get Portage to go with you. Old Poppy scares me stiff. Besides, I think I've got a headache. Sig, couldn't you give me something for it?
Men's son on copper son on.
Well, does it taste bad? I don't like nasty medicine.
No. It's a Latin. Sound mind and sound body. The mind has just been demonstrated and the body is evident.
You talk too much, Sig.
Yes, I know, dear. But only a trifle of it filters down into that pretty head. Well, if you're not going with Pete, come back to the castle. I'll read you an old book I borrowed from our English friend.
Who's interested in old books?
Don't worry, darling. You will be in this one.
Well, Mr.
Mr. Portage? Did you meet the ogre of the castle?
I remembered about, Jelly Belly. That made it easier, Mr. Proctor.
Ah, poor Joe. I remember even at school, he was the kind of fat boy who bluffs it out. Fights back. Buys popularity by treating the girls to ice cream when he has to steal a dime from his grandmother's purse to do it. Believes it when they say he'll go to hell. Poor Joe. Ah, but that's life. And, speaking of life, Pete, how's the work going?
Going just fine.
Mm-hmm. If you succeed, what happens?
Why, life is prolonged.
Yes, I know that, but I meant something else. A dog, for example, isn't that supposed to be a wolf that hasn't fully developed? A sort of unborn wolf? Isn't that so?
Mm-hmm. There's a theory like that.
In other words, it's a tame animal because it doesn't have time to grow up to savagery. Isn't that supposed to be one of the mechanisms of evolutionary development?
Yeah, that's right.
But what will happen with man? What would he grow into if you lengthened his life? You know, Pete, time and craving, that's our life. Now, what are you offering us? Another 200 years of time and craving?
Time is the proper for more good.
Mm, time doesn't guarantee good, my boy.
But you can fight for good, Mr. Proper. We fought for good when I was in Spain.
And you'll find, Pete, that evil comes even out of those fights for good.
But, what do you expect people to do when we're attacked by fascists? Sit down and let their throats be cut?
No, I expect them to fight. People generally do, and the results are generally disastrous. I should like them to try something more effective someday.
Yeah, but that's cynicism. Defeatism.
Hey there! Doctor!
Oh, here comes the Lord of Stoic Castle. What is it, Joe?
Why the devil can't you leave my man alone?
Which man, Joe?
My estate manager. Interfering with him in his work. You've been bothering him about those bastard farmhands again. What do you think you're doing? What's the idea?
The idea? It's an old one, Joe. Your manager's treating those harvest hands like vermin, not like men and women. They haven't enough to eat.
You're trying to make reds out of them. You're a lousy agitator.
I thought we were talking about eating.
You're stalling.
Eating and working, wasn't that it?
I've put up with you for years, Bill, for old time's sake. But you're making the place dangerous for decent people to live in. I'll have you run out of the valley. I see that I'll... somebody get me a chair.
Here you are, Mr. Doyle.
Thanks. I mustn't get angry. A whisper said so. Terrible thing. Terrible to fall into the hands of a living god. Terrible.
What's the matter, Joe?
Nothing. I'm better. It's all right.
I've got something to show you, Joe. Been meaning to. It's a sun motor. A thing for making use of solar energy. Runs my electric generator.
What? Why the devil do you want to do that? Haven't you got your current wired in from the city?
Why, of course, but I'm trying to see how independent I can be from the city. Little Jeffersonian democracy.
Oh, you're turning back the clock, Bill. You're going against progress.
Am I? Well, don't worry about it, Bill.
Oh, you're a crackpot, Bill. I guess you always will be. But remember what I said. You stay away from my manager. I won't stand it. I'm the boss on my estate.
Mr. Stoic forgot all about his blood pressure and the living God, and he felt suddenly happy. It occurred to him, in spite of everything, Bill Proctor liked him. In a glow of good feeling, he went home to his castle and straight to Virginia's boudoir.
Oh, Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe.
Hello, baby. Glad to see me? My baby.
Oh, Uncle Joe.
Oh, Miss Hall. What are you doing here?
I was a bit worried by the call for yours at lunch. That's why I came up here, to make sure of catching you the moment you came in. The prevention, you know, is better than cure. I'm not going to let you get influenza if I can help it.
No, is that it? Well, I feel fine. Nothing wrong with me at all. That cough wasn't anything. Only my old, chronic bronchitis.
Yes, but I'd like to listen in. Open your shirt.
He's right, Uncle Joe. You wouldn't want anything to happen.
Well, all right.
That's fine. Now, breathe in deeply. Breathe.
Night fell on Stoic Castle, and the long halls were shrouded with shadow. In his room, Pete Boone was dreaming of Virginia, trying to equate his vague yearning for political and religious justice with the warm glow he felt when he considered Miss Monsible, even objectively. While, in the young lady's room, the object of his adoration,
was busy redecorating her toenails.
Oh, darn. Polish is coming off my toe. Darn it. Darn it. Ooh, polish stinks. Uncle Joe?
Good evening, Ann.
Sid, what are you doing here?
I thought we might have a little talk.
After all, we were interrupted this afternoon.
Sid, you're crazy. Uncle Joe will kill you if he finds you. Why, he'll pull that gun out of his pocket.
No, darling, he won't. You take the word of a medical man, anything.
Uncle Joe will sleep through the last trump. I've just seen to that.
I think you're awful.
Well, don't let me interrupt your labors. Proceed with your paint job. Yeah. Woman's work is never done.
You see, I don't like the way you talk.
The polish, darling, is running.
Oh, darling. I don't like your getting fresh with me. You know, Uncle Joe almost caught you this afternoon.
With my trusty hypodermic, my dear, I disarm all suspicion.
But you're not even romantic or anything. You just laugh at me and you make dirty cracks. Well, it isn't even nice.
You know, I admired the way you flirted with young Pete this evening. Uncle Joe was hopping jealous of. Oh, darling, poor Pete.
Well, it doesn't wait till I get time for you.
No,
that's
my telephone name.
Oh, you.
Well, it takes a professor of pharmacology to put an old buzzard into a coma with a few drops of this and that.
I won't have you calling Uncle Joe a buzzard.
No. Shall we say then, a senile, foul-smelling goat?
Why, you dirty. Uncle Joe's a better man than you'll ever be. I think he's wonderful.
Yes. You think he's wonderful. But all the same, in about 5 minutes, you'll be kissing me.
What? Why, you filthy, dirty man.
Look out, darling. You're spoiling the polish on your toe.
Just wait till I'm finished.
I don't believe I will. You know, the perfume of yours is strong enough to cut right through the stink of the polish.
Damn you. Get away from me. No good.
Virginia, I believe you're going to kiss me now.
Oh, you rotten.
That's much better. And in the master bedroom, under a 25-foot mural of the crucifixion of St. Peter by El Greco, the Lord of Stoic Castle slept with a revolver under his pillow and with fear sitting at his bedside. Crawling, damp fear. In his dream, the shroud flapped, and he heard the squeak of the screw as he clamped down the heavy lid of his coffin.
You are listening to After Many a Summer Dies the Swan by Aldous Huxley. And here again, Miss Eva LeGallion.
As a playwright, he has been less successful, though I've always liked his play, The World of Light. Some critics have resented his increasing concern with the field of mysticism, which has naturally caused a change in the manner as well as the contents of his work. Sidney Case says of him, for instance, from being anxiously intellectual, he became too confusedly anti-intellectual. Well, people who think along these lines bemoan the fact that he has become less and less an entertaining novelist and more a man absorbed in the search for truth. I see no reason to condemn a man for that. Might be a good thing for the state of the world in general if more of us engaged in this arduous occupation. One of the results of this concern of his is his book, The Perennial Philosophy, which has opened doors to many thousands of people, including myself, and which seems to me a tremendously valuable contribution to living. But we'd better get on with our story, which presents Mr. Huxley in what one might perhaps call his middle period. So we'll resume with Act Two of After Many a Summer Dies the Swan in just a moment.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. Act Two of the New Theater's transcribed production of After Many a Summer Dies the Swan.
Muddling about with the Holberg papers was completely fascinating. The fifth Earl of Garminster, about 1789, writes as follows. If men and women did woo as noisily as do cats, what Londoner could ever hope to sleep a night? There speaks the 18th century. But the 20th century, life in Stoyt Castle came rapidly to a rolling boil. The baby, Miss Mauntsable, had that inward dreamy look of young ladies who discovered that love does not necessarily go the largest checkbook. While Uncle Joe became chronically ill-tempered due to jealousy of a, oddly enough, young Pete. On the longevity front, Dr. Obispo swore constantly that soon we should all be living as long as crocodiles. But for those of us doomed to shuffle off the mortal coil, there is always the Beverly Pantheon, Joe's tight president.
And the total profit, Mr. Stoyt, comes to over $500,000 for the three-month period. Not bad for a boneyard, eh, Mr. Stoyt?
Don't talk that way. Close that door. That caterwauling organ ruins my digestion.
Sure, Mr. Stoyt, sure.
Now, what'd you get me over here for? I don't like this place. I don't like cemeteries.
Mr. Stoyt, look, that's your idea I had. You know that ridge up there by the tiny Taj Mahal?
Yeah.
Well, I figure we can dig right under it and make it a catacombs.
What?
A Class A catacombs, like in Rome. Now, how about a chapel of the martyrs with a nice plaster group of girls being eaten up by lions? People would get a big kick out of that. Sex appeal in death. What a promotion.
Listen, Charlie, I don't like the idea. And there's another thing. Some young fool out there had the nerve to show me a place he said he'd save for me. Fire him.
Sure, Mr. Stoyt, sure.
You can get the estimates and plans for your cave, but no martyrs.
Not even one day, Mr. Stoyt? Just one?
No martyr. That's final. Call my car. I want to get out of here. Now, you tell me about Pete Boone.
He's a confused young man, if that's what you mean, Joe.
I want to know what should I do about it.
Why?
Ginny keeps patting him like a big dog. If the kid would only make a pass at her, I could throw him out. But you can't just fire a big dog.
You still like your Virginia, eh?
Yeah, I guess so. She makes you feel good. Like when you get tanked up on scotch or when you give a toy to a kid. She's kind of, kind of like a daughter.
But more than a daughter, eh, Joe? Better than a daughter. A combination, is that it?
Sort of. But she's changed. She isn't, she isn't the same. Besides, I haven't been feeling good. That blasted cemetery always gets me down.
Nobody left, eh, Joe? No friends, no religion, no philosophy, and only Virginia.
There's no sense to anything. That's what's wrong.
It's an idiot world, Joe. We all live in an idiot universe. Of course, we can't all afford to build it out of concrete and steel the way you did.
You mean a castle? What's wrong with the castle?
Well, nothing, if you can stand idiocy.
Never mind the whole thing. Never get a straight answer out of you lousy professors anyway. Forget it. Never should have talked to you in the first place.
No. No, Joe, you shouldn't.
And you lay off those harvest workers. You've been stirring them up. This is my place, Phil. My place.
Working on the Holberg papers kept me busy during the day. Most of it was dull, merely accounts, legal documents, and business letters. Not at all my cup of tea. But at 12 o'clock, I found the parchment-bound notebook belonging to the fifth Earl of Drumster. The first entry was July 1780. And as I read, I could hear in my mind's ear the strong voice of the fifth Earl, author of this remarkable journal.
July 1780. One of the church livings in my gift being vacant. My sister sent to me today a young divine whom she commends for his virtue. But I will not have him. Give me the parson that drinks deep, rides to hounds and games the night away. Such a parson tests the faith of his flock. When it is thus, we come to salvation.
Wicked old fellow. Now, let's see.
March 1784. Open the old tombs beneath the house today. A kind of ropey slime depends from the roof and coats the walls. It is a condensation of decay.
No! Tombs beneath Garminster House, that'll cause quite a ripple in England. Let's see now. 1789, 94, 95.
I have tried King David's remedy against old age and found it wanting. Warmth cannot be imparted, but only evoked. I'm an old man now, weak and shrunken, without desires.
Oh, the fifth Earl suffers from Uncle Joe's complaint. Well, well, well.
July 1796. There are carp in the fish ponds at Gunnister with leaden discs which were attached to their tails in the days of Charles I, 300 years ago.
By George, so he's onto the carp, too.
I marvel at the strength and unimpaired agility of these great fishes. The secret of eternal life is not to be found in old books or even in heaven. It's to be found in the mud and only awaits the skillful angler.
The secret of life in the mud. Well, won't that hand over his poet Joan his best ideas on longevity anticipated in the 18th century and by the fifth Earl of Garnetstone?
Do you mean to say some old fossilized Earl was onto the carp theory? Can you try that?
Well, you're not annoyed.
Oh, why the devil should I be?
Well, your theory, I mean, it's been anticipated.
Let's hear more about your fifth Earl. You say he lived till 90?
More than 90. 96 or 7. He died. A bit of a scandal once more.
Oh, not really. Well, what sort of a scandal?
Well, it seems he had a tendency towards homicidal pleasure.
Killed somebody?
Not actually killed, just damaged.
Yeah. You know, the old buzzard's line, the secret of life is to be found in the mud. That's almost a definition of science.
Well, I was up to 1796. The old chap was feeling pretty seedy.
Pharmaceutical tragedy. Well, I'll bet he could have been fixed up with a week of injections. Hey, get to the diary. Let's hear the old goat speak for himself.
Yeah, well, certainly. January 1797.
Why should a man die at 80 years when a fish can retain its youth for 2 and 3 centuries? Man cooks his food before eating it, and generally throws away precisely those organs of the fish in which it is most reasonable to assume that the substance preventive of decay is contained.
Good Lord. Don't tell me the old buzzard is going to eat a raw fish gut.
That's exactly what he is doing. Now, listen.
My first 3 attempts provoked an uncontrollable retching. At the fourth, I was finally able to retain a few spoonfuls of the nauseating mincemeat.
Oh, talk about courage. I'd rather go through an air raid than that.
February 1797. It is now a month since I began to test the truth of my hypothesis. And I am now ingesting each day not less than 6 ounces of raw, minced viscera of freshly opened carp.
Oh, good Lord. A fish has more parasites than any other animal. It makes my blood run cold.
But you needn't worry. The diary goes on, you know. March, improved in strength. April, horseback riding again.
After all, this is more than a joke. Raw fish gut, prevention of senile poisoning, and rejuvenation.
Rejuvenation. In September, he's been out fox hunting. After which, there's no entry until 1799.
No entry till 1799. That's when his case is getting really interesting. He goes and leaves us in the dark.
Oh, not entirely in the dark. There's an entry a little further on. The age of 81, the fifth Earl, is the proud father of a bouncing baby boy.
At 81? What do you think of that?
And here in 1820, he seems to be in the prime of life. 1826, he's taken on a new housekeeper named Kate. In 1831, he has repairs made on the dungeons of Garnister House.
And how about his health?
Oh, he seems to take it for granted. Wait, now listen to this. March, 1834.
I am the criminal negligence of Kate. Priscilla, my young servant girl, has been allowed to escape from a subterranean place of confinement. Unfortunately, she bears upon her person the evidence that for some weeks she has been a subject of my investigations. She holds in her hand my reputation, and perhaps even my liberty and life.
Well, there it is. That's the scandal. The old devil. The girl must have told a story.
Well, what next? I really can't make it out. It's devilish odd.
My funeral will be conducted with all the pomp befitting my rank and virtues. My only regret is that I shall be unable to leave my subterranean retreat to see the pageantry of woe. I go now to my own private hell, deep beneath the walls of Gonister House.
And that's all. There's nothing else. Just two more blank pages and the end of the book.
And nobody knows how long the old buzzard lived on?
Not outside the family. Was an old woman living in Gonister House now, Lady Jane Herbert, the last of the line before the
children. I still realize what this means. Well, the fifth Earl could still be. Yes, he could be.
Bless me. I suppose he really could.
But if you've got to find out. I'm taking the next boat to England.
Finger crazy. You're absolutely crazy. Why are we going to England?
It's a secret, Angel. I haven't even told Uncle Joe yet, but you take it from me. We'll go.
Well, I wish you'd go somewhere. And I don't mean England.
Harsh words, Angel.
I mean it. I don't like the way you act. I feel like I'm double-crossing Uncle Joe all the time.
Darling, you are.
Besides, I haven't been able to say my prayers. I don't like you, Steve. I don't like you at all.
Still, there isn't much you can do about it, is there? You make up your mind that you hate me, don't you? That you won't speak to me again, won't even look at me.
Go away.
But you can't keep that promise, can you? No. You don't mean that at all.
Father, Portage.
Yes, Mr. Stoyce.
Come on up to the roof with me. I want to talk to you.
Yes, of course.
Get in the elevator.
Well, thank you.
Had a rotten time today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was that blasted cemetery. Always gets me down. Going up to see Virginia now. She always makes me feel better. Wouldn't know what to do without. She's mine. She loves her old Uncle Joe. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. Here we are.
After you, Mr. Stoyce.
Cut it out, please. If you kiss me again, I'll hate you.
Sure, darling. Sure, go ahead. Hate me.
Baby, what this for?
Uncle Joe.
You snake. You dirty, slimy, filthy snake. I'll kill you.
No.
I'll kill you.
No, Uncle Joe, no. Look out for that gun.
I'll kill you. Get away.
You're a lousy shot, Uncle Joe.
Let go of my arm, Jenny.
No.
I'll get him this time.
No, no, don't shoot, Uncle Joe.
Let go of him, Jenny. Let go. Let him shoot if he dares.
Evie, what do you mean, if I dare? I'll kill you, Bishop.
No, no, you won't, Uncle Joe. You won't. Because then you'll die, too.
What? What's that?
If you kill me, it won't be long before they've got you stretched out under the black marble mausoleum at your Beverly Pantheon.
Well, what the devil do you mean?
That I've just found a new way to keep you alive. But without me, you'll be a dead man in a month.
No! No, you don't mean that! That isn't so! That isn't true, is it, Obispo?
You've had a stroke, sure, you've had a stroke. But I've got good news for you. There's a chance that we have found the secret of life in the mud.
You found it? What is it, Obispo? What is it? I've got to have it now.
Drop the gun, Uncle Joe.
What? The gun. Sure, sure. What is it, Obispo? I'm going to live. I'm not going to die.
We shall see, Joe.
You've got to keep me alive, Obispo. You've got to.
Oh? After you tried to kill me?
Yeah, it was an accident. I didn't mean to. You can't let me die when you know how to stop it. You can't.
If you don't mind all, I'm going to sit down.
You've got to keep me living. You've got to. You can have anything you want. I can pay for anything.
Anything? Well, Uncle Joe, now you're talking turkey. Sir, now you are talking turkey.
The Stoyce private airplane whisked apart to New York, then Gander, Newfoundland, Shannon Island, and finally, the modern chariot of the sun set down rather roughly at Croydon Airport, London. Consul Gas supplied a tremendous black limousine, and off it drove through the diluted London sunshine down into the country towards Gonister House. Mr. Stoyce sprawled under a fur rug in the back seat of the car. He was on sedation by the doctor's order, so he slept fitfully as the car roared on. Dr. Obispo was at the wheel, while Virginia sat aloof,
on the front seat.
I dreamt I dwelt in Marble Hall.
Shut up, will you?
No fear, wake Uncle Joe, honey. It's out like a light. And will you love me in December as you do in May?
You.
Why not? It's open season on doctors, darling. But don't worry, don't worry. We understand each other, Uncle Joe and I. We even understand about you. I dreamed I killed the golden goose that laid the golden egg.
Stop it!
She objects to my singing. Goodness knows why. I have such a charming voice, particularly well adapted to a small auditorium like this car.
What is it? Are we here?
Yes, indeed we are here, Uncle Joe. Gunnis the house.
I like it, Uncle Joe. It's scary.
Oh, it's all right, baby. It's all right.
Yeah, look out for the creepers in the path. Not much of a garden, eh? It's all grown over. What's the matter?
Someone behind that bush.
Come on out, youngster. Come out.
Look what I've got. I've got a gas mask. That's what I've got.
Ah, that's nice. Gas mask all filled with flowers, huh? What's your name?
Me. I'm nine.
Nine?
Granny says I'm undernourished.
Huh. Does your granny live here, Minnie?
In the kitchen. She's dead.
Oh. Do you like candies?
Huh?
What the devil they call candies in England? What do you like from sweets? Let us in and you can have them all.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, nice chocolatey sweets. Whole box of them.
Well, all right. Come on. Right along this hall.
I don't get this, Obispo. I don't understand why we're here. Why can't you tell me?
Now, don't get worried, Uncle Joe.
Obispo, can you prove absolutely there's no such place as hell?
Can you prove the wrong side of the moon is not inhabited by green elephants?
Well, seriously.
Don't bother me with the nonsense.
But do you think hell is possible?
Everything is possible. Millie.
Yes, sir?
Where's the cellar door, dear?
No.
What do you mean, no? Show us the door to the cellar.
I won't. I'm afraid. There's ghosts down there.
You don't have to go, dear. Just show us. You don't. You shan't have any more candies. They're sweet. Come on, give them back.
No.
Yes, I'm going to eat them all up myself.
Eat them?
Mmm. Oh, they're good. Good.
I want them.
Oh, poor little Lily isn't going to have any more sweet chocolates. Mmm, they're so good.
I want my sweets.
Now, till you show us the door to the cellar, dear. Pull that flashlight up.
I'm scared.
Yes, it's crazy. I don't like this, Obispo. It's damp down here. I'm not well.
Oh, now, just stick with us, Uncle Joe. Maybe we can fix it so you won't have to find out about hell. Wait a minute. The door.
Is it locked?
No. Wait a minute. Come on.
That's awful. That smell.
Pretty bad. Come on.
I don't like this. I don't like this at all. What do you think you're going to find out here?
Hey, stop being a sniveling baby, Uncle Joe. I'm not sure of anything. For all I know, you may die in 5 minutes.
No, don't say that.
Well, then, come on.
Oh, that smell. It's getting worse. It's awful.
Just around this corner here. Put the flashlight up. Here, give it to me. I'll go ahead. Now, there's an iron barred door here. Wait till I get the lights off. Doesn't quite seem to...
What the devil? What's going on with these fellows? What are you laughing about? What? Good.
Lord. Yes, that, Uncle Joe. That's a feet late.
What? For Lord's sake. What?
By Harry, old man, Proctor was right. It's an unborn ape that's had time to grow up.
Look at him. Look at him, Uncle Joe. Look here. Isn't it too good? Look at the face. His mat of hair, deep eyes, no eyebrows. Look at the forehead. Dirty wrinkles and that shelf of bone jutting out over his eyes. Just look at him. Look at him scratch. Look at him, Joe. The feet late. What is it?
What is it? It's a man. That's what it is. Look at the ribbon across his chest. That's the Order of St. George. You're looking at the noble lord, the fifth Earl of Donnithorpe.
No. No.
Yes, yes, a bit on the front of us. 201 years old, that's genuine.
But what happened to it?
Just time.
Time?
Yes, he never died, but it's time. Time for a man, the unborn ape, to grow up to be.
Oh, take me away, it's awful.
But it's the best joke I ever heard. It's absolutely the best. We don't have to experiment anymore.
You know, what do you mean?
You can start taking the stuff at once.
Oh, no!
Yes, if you're willing to become like that, you can live forever, John.
How long do you figure it would take before a person talks like that? I mean, it wouldn't happen all at once. There'd be a time while a person, well, you know, while he wouldn't change
anything. You don't want to.
Once you get over the first shock, I mean, it's better than dying, isn't it? Looks like he has a pretty good time. I mean, in his own way, of course. Don't you think so, Bispo? Don't you think so, Bispo?
You have heard After Many a Summer Dies the Swan by Aldous Huxley. The dramatization was by Ernest Kenoy. And here again, Miss Eva Le Gallion.
Oh, there's something decidedly ghastly about that ending. Might almost have been written by Edgar Allan Poe. Makes me glad it's still daylight here. Now about next week, we're going to present a very different kind of story in a decidedly popular vein, one for which we have had many requests. It's a new dramatization of Daphne du Maurier's great yarn, Rebecca. So until next Sunday and the new theater production of Rebecca, this is Eva Le Gallion saying good night. And don't forget, join us at the theater.
Tonight's production of After Many a Summer Dies the Swan was transcribed in Hollywood. Heard in the cast were Ramsey Hill as Jeremy, Ted Van Elst as Proctor, Francis X. Bushman as Joe Stoit, Lynn Whitney as Virginia, Tony Barrett as Dr. Obispo, William Lally as Pete, Ralph Montgomery as Charlie, Donald Morrison as the Sixth Earl of Gonister, and Marlene Ames as the girl. After Many a Summer Dies the Swan was directed by Andrew C. Love. Your announcer, Fred Collins. It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. NBC means the best in music. Here's a listening reminder. Be sure to hear tonight's broadcast of the NBC Symphony Orchestra Summer Concert Series. Featured this evening with the NBC Symphony Orchestra will be Robert Merrill, with Milton Katims as guest conductor. Mr. Merrill will be heard in the spiritual Deep River, On the Road to Mandalay, and the Toreador song from Carmen. Conductor Katims will lead the NBC Symphony Orchestra and a very colorful Collaborignon overture. Other selections on the program will include Rosenkavalier waltzes, Betuque by Fernandez, Debussy's Clair de Lune, and the suite in F sharp minor by Dagnani. And then tomorrow, Monday, be sure to hear the Boston Pops Orchestra under the direction of Arthur Fiedler. The Boston Pops Orchestra will feature among its selections Fane's Alice in Wonderland music in a suite and the overture to Wagner's Rienzi. The Boston Pops Orchestra will also include in its performance the famous guard mount from Bizet's well-known work, Carmen. So, tonight, hear Robert Merrill and Milton Katims as guest artists on the NBC Symphony Orchestra Summer Concert Series. Then tomorrow, hear the Boston Pops Orchestra under the direction of Arthur Fiedler. Yes, for the very best in music, keep tuned to NBC.
is NBC, the national broadcasting company.